at Vices Radio Network.
Woo! Y'all gonna make me lose my mind. Up in here, y'all gonna make me go all out. Up in here, up in here.
Welcome back to It's Just Bodybuilding with your co-host, Big Ron Parlow, and of course, the more beautiful one, Dusty Hanshaw.
I have lights today.
Yeah, what's going on? You told the clouds to go away, Dusty.
Well, and I was confused. I thought people would like it better when they couldn't see me. I mean, my mother says I have a face for radio, but the fans said it was too dark. I was like, okay,
They want to see the emotion in the face when you're expressing yourself, buddy.
Makes sense. I understand. Patience,
so
we're
back for episode 3. And literally 10 seconds before we started the show, you got a box came in the mail.
Yes, a knock at the door. FedEx showed up. And
so let's see what this is. Can you open that on air?
This is absolutely. I mean, at my house, you never really know what might be coming in the mail. But this time I know, thank God. This
could have been a false package. That can be anything.
But, see, my good man, Steve Cardillo, always takes care of me. And I saw he made some camouflage belts. And I just, he sends me so much stuff. I just double click or say awesome on the belts. And he texts me and he's like, hey, I don't think you noticed I made one for you. And I was like, well, I'll be honest, you've made so many. I kind of assumed there was not one for me. But here she is.
Oh, shit.
The brand new camouflage Cardillo belt in the mail. Look at this. It's got the you guys probably can't see it because camouflage, but there it is, Cardillo. And she's a beauty. Yep. And see, he prepped me for off season. I told him, I was like, Steve, I'm getting a little chunky is the plan. So we went with a large this time. I usually wear a medium, as you know. And wow, it's like it's a different material.
How many Cardillo belts do you have, Dusty?
I don't know, 12 or 13.
And you only really wear that one old white one that's just beat to shit, right?
So, yeah, I went through the red one until, it was red and brown because the red was coming off.
Yeah.
Now the white has reached that point.
Yeah, it's looking sad.
Going into full off-season. Now I've only got 3 large belts. And my plan is to get nice and chunky because a lot of people don't understand that I have no fear of the fat. And I've got the chin blocker now.
The chin blocker, yes, it's strategic.
People will not know how many chins I have with the beard. They'll see my fat chipmunk cheeks, but no chin count.
So, right.
When you drop your head and you're doing the press, and that shit just gets wild for me. I'm a fat-faced guy to begin with. So they won't know this is a large, except for the fact I just told the whole world that my new Cardillo is a large. And they will not know about the chins, even though I just told them why I have a beard. So there we go.
There you go. Well, I love his stuff. I only have one Cardillo belt, and I love it. Fucking wear it all the time when I need a belt,
Well, that's the humorous part about it is I tell people all the time, like, it's expensive. I'm like, you're going to buy one belt ever. You will never need another belt. If you want to be fancy and have your name on it, which, I don't know, I just feel like the cool kid when I do that. Plus, it's like, that's my fucking belt. I leave it somewhere. You'd have balls of steel to walk into the gym with my belt. Someone else would kill you for me.
That's funny. I'm the type of guy that likes to wear stuff out. Like you say, you have 12 belts, but you really only wear one or two of them.
Yeah.
And I like to wear stuff till it's just completely done. And I have a pair of lifting straps. Those blue lifting straps I wear all the time?
Yes.
I've had those going on now over 25 years.
That's going to be the strongest strap on the planet.
Yeah. They were LA Paw. There was a company called LA Paw back in the day in the 90s. That made belts, and they had the lever belts for the power lifters and the gloves and shit. And I just bought these LA Paw straps one day, and they weren't, the old cotton straps that everyone would break doing shrugs.
Yeah.
They're like a nylon.
Probably kicked out a good $18, $12 for these bad boys.
At that least. They might have even been 20, Dusty. But back, in 90s terms, that's like an $8 of cocaine, right?
Exactly. Am I going out tonight or am I getting these straps?
So I got these straps, man, it's got to be 25 years ago. And I keep saying, I'm just going to wear, I can't throw them out now because they've been too loyal, too reliable. And I can't
see you through your career.
I can't believe they haven't broken. And then I'm actually now with all the traveling, I can't believe I haven't lost them.
Yeah.
And I did forget them in a gym in Calgary one time. And I thought, oh, fuck, I lost my straps. And the very next day, a guy texts me, a guy I barely knew. He messaged me on Facebook. He's like, hey, I got your straps. And I'm like, what?
That's awesome. He's like, yeah, famous.
Yeah. And then he goes, I saw you using them last night and you left them on the desk and I knew they were yours. So I took them and I'm on my way to Edmonton next weekend to go to a, you know, some sort of event. So he brought them to the gym and left them at the gym for me.
That man is a saint. Whoever you are, I salute you.
A separate city. I thought I'd finally lost them and they found their way back.
Home, dude, it's like, they just find their way. That's impressive. Like you said, the not losing them is actually more impressive to me than not breaking them.
Yeah, and then I think there's something wrong with me because, you know, you start examining your own psychology. You know, people give me brand new awesome straps, and I'll use them for a workout, and I almost feel like I cheated on my old straps.
Yeah, I can see that.
Like, the relationship is better than that. I shouldn't be doing that sort of stuff, Dusty.
Who's had your back? Who found you from Edmonton to Calgary, you bastard?
Who traveled the world with you?
I mean, don't be trying no Popeye's chicken strips. You're a Chick-fil-A man.
Right, yes. The debate is on now, hey?
The chicken sandwich, you're in. Your straps, you're in. You don't need to know.
See, these are the important cultural references that we need to make sure we touch on every episode, Dusty, that are really going to make a difference. Yes, ties it all together. So, yeah, I'm happy. Episode 3, people are asking about the guest situation. So we're getting such good feedback off episode 1 where we had no guest, and then crazy feedback off the interview with Ian Valair. And we see the pluses of doing something where maybe we alternate. Mm-hmm. So we're going to kind of look at a guest every 2 weeks. Hey, Dusty?
Yeah, no, I think we both agreed. And the feedback that we got both – DMs, messages, and on Instagram was, or not Instagram, with on YouTube, was they wanted some more time of us going over things.
Yeah.
And so when we talked about it, it really just came down to how much time is there. So the thought process that we kind of discussed was we will do a guest every other week, but there's still going to be some time at the end, hopefully, to do some questions. But it's really hard, like we discussed. I mean, you and I both said after the show last time, we could have went for 2 or 3 hours with Ian. How are we going to cut him off and say, oh, well, we got to get these questions in?
Yeah, you know, I kind of like that we left them wanting more. You know, they say that's kind of important. You know, you know what I mean? The whole thing, you know.
I usually leave them disappointed, so make him want more.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's better than I'm really used to the disappointment. so it's nice to know that they want more. And, you know, once again, man, how many ladies messaged you about the show?
It was actually really good. Just like we said after the first one, it's awesome to see how many women, I mean, as athletes are following it. And I think that's a huge thing. And like we already discussed, you know, guys, I mean, I think when you really look at the hardcore women out there, we got to step our game up to compete, not to get beaten, not just hold on here. You know, I mean, it's awesome to see. And I feel like with like we'd already discussed our training, you know, when I'm training, most of the ladies I work with are just machines, and it's the guys that I'm dealing with falling apart on stuff. So it's cool to see that transition, and they're actually following the show and enjoying it. And the only thing I've asked, and I'll ask again now live, is men and women, like, if you've got suggestions on things you guys want to know, as you can see, we're kind of tailoring this as we go. So whatever you're into, ask, and we'll probably make it happen.
So let's go straight into the first topic we had, was just catching everybody up on what we're doing. What's going on right now? You know, you're doing your this big off season. You haven't been really heavy in a while, right?
Oh, years. Yeah, years. It's been, I think, you know, what happened for me is I really, in one part was a bad way. I really kind of accepted my role as a guy that does marketing and is not really a bodybuilder anymore. And with that, in my brain, I was like, why would I get super heavy? It films better. Nor, you know, if I'm, you know, 285 and somewhat, you know, not a slob.
And still inclining 4 plates.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can still do all those things, but I'm a firm believer if you're truly wanting to make change, you gotta put some weight on, you know? And, actually a conversation on Dylan Armbrust's, radio show that I did a few months ago is kind of what started the nudge. because I told him, I was like, yeah, well, you know, I mean, I know who I am or whatever. And I kind of pride myself on that. And I know you do too, is like, we know our lane, you know, right. I'm not trying to win an Olympia. I'm not trying to win an Arnold. I'm not trying to go to those shows. And Dylan kind of gave me a little pushback and he was like, has it ever occurred to you that the reason that you fell back so far is you used to compete and train to win. And now you compete because you kind of want to and it's fun. But do you think that that might be the reason you've fallen back so far? And it was kind of like a slap in the face. Like, yeah, that's absolutely a fact. I mean, you're a loser if you go in a loser.
Right.
And I just realized it's, and again, I mean, before anybody thinks I'm ridiculous and chasing some crazy dream, it's, I just want to give it a one run to see how far I can take it because it's been years and I'm healthy. Like my body's healthy. My blood work's awesome. You know, my tissue guys are all, I mean, everything about training tells me if you're going to make a run, go for it. So I decided, screw it. I'm going to give it one run. And the only difference is it's not that I'm saying, okay, cool. I want to go win a pro show. It's just that I want to truly go in trying to win. And knowing it doesn't matter if I don't, but more importantly, marketing what that process is, because I think so many guys don't know, as you and I have discussed, and some of my questions later in the show will prove it, of what it takes to get there and also what genetics are. I mean, you know, I'm like you, I hang out at 285 without trying. That's three or four meals a day. You know, right. I'll be 300 in a month.
Yeah.
And then that's when the battle starts for every pound and it's uncomfortable and life sucks. So yeah, it'll be fun to kind of bring along people with it.
So this is actually a fantastic topic. So a guy with your incredible mindset, I mean, you have a like shut the fuck up and do it mindset. I mean, you're an 800-pound deadlifter. You know what I mean? Like the stuff you do in the gym is evidence of your nobody can ever tell me what I can't do type of mindset.
Right.
But even with that strong of a mindset, the industry itself can still get to you. You know, you have all these people, I assume everyone from judges to fans to people even close to you telling you, hey, man, you're an awesome freak with tons of muscle, but, you know, I don't know what they're saying. Maybe they think structurally, you know, you're not going to be able to do this or that. And it gets to you.
Right.
And you start to think, oh, well, you know, I am a freak, a big, strong freak, and I have all these awesome qualities. So I'll focus on those. And I you know, I probably won't win because of this and this and this and this.
Right.
Even at that level, it can wear you down, right?
Yeah, I think it's both, you know, some of it is that, and some of it's you're trying to be a realist because I do tell people all the time, like, you know, part of people's problems, they don't know their lane. You know, I can make a great career never competing again. And when I say career, I mean money without ever stepping on stage again. But when someone kind of smacked me and said, yeah, but, you know, and I had a close friend also after I reached out to a few people and said, hey, I'm bouncing around this idea of actually pushing again one more time, like I'm getting ready for the USA's only for a pro show. And one person I know very well literally just said to me, he said, you know, if you don't, this will be the only thing you've ever walked away from knowing you didn't go for it.
Right.
Like, you know, and if you do and you place fucking last, it's okay because then you can say, cool, now I'm going to focus on my strengths. Right. So it was nice because when I heard that, it was kind of like, damn, that's accurate. You know, because just like you, I was never going to win a show. Then I was never going to turn pro. Then I was never going to do this. So you get used to knocking them down. And then eventually, I think I just found my own lane and said, no, this is what I should do. And now it's kind of like, well, fuck what I should do. I'm not going to stop making money while I do this. I'm just going to spend a little more, you know, and be uncomfortable and fatter and less attractive than usual.
No, I'm looking forward to it. And I know that a lot of people are probably gonna be some people a little bit confused by what you're saying because they're like, what do you mean he hasn't been pushing it? He fucking bent rows 5 plates and he deadlifts 8 plates and he fucking trains like an animal and you're using the phrases like push it, I haven't pushed it in a while. Right. But what you're talking about is eating your body weight up and just getting into that like zone where you're like, fuck, I got another meal, because people don't realize how kind of relatively easy it is for you to be a very lean 290.
Yeah, no, this part's easy and you get it too. Like, I love to train. When I'm done bodybuilding and my goal, like a lot of guys, is I want to shrink when I'm done. I want to be 230, comfortable, you know, buying clothes off of a rack, but I will train like I train now. Just it'll all be relative. It'll come down. But if six plates for six becomes hard, I'll be trying to get seven. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
That's all I know. So that's where people get confused. It's like, I train that way because I love it. You know, and much like you. But, yeah, the eating is going to suck. I mean, it already does. So.
yeah. Okay, well, we're looking forward to it, man. So what's the current weight right now?
So after, I don't know if it'd be sold, but I had about a 3-day skid where I'm actually allergic to something I've been eating for too long. So I had to figure out what it was, which means I can't eat egg bites right now. Literally could not eat for about 4 days. Once we figured that out, and I knew it was funny. I reached out to Dante, of course. I'm like, hey, I'm not on a ton of shit. I don't know what's going on. My blood work is clean. Did I get a virus? What the hell happened? He guessed food allergy. We went down the list, and then we started seeing weird shit. Like, I never have skin problems. I had acne on my shoulders. And when I sent him that text, he goes, you have to figure out what food you're eating that's killing you, because right. there's something off. And the acne put me over the edge, because that's disgusting. So it was bad enough. I had to wear, like, it wasn't one day when I put a tank top on to run to the store real quick, and I saw the mirror, and I was like, can't fucking walk around town like this. It looks like because people's brain, oh my God, he's a drug abuser. I'm like,
right.
Actually, it's egg whites, but whatever. you know, so we figured that out. So I was 288 this morning, which is good. I started at 275. So that's a nice little bump already. And the food's getting easier right now. So like I said, I think I'll cruise till about 300, and then you're going to see me crying on this show here in a minute.
That's cool. You know, I've actually gone through that same egg white thing. I had to take a year off of egg whites at one point. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. And I just stopped eating them for like a year, and then I just kind of started putting them back in, and I was fine. But yeah, I went through a point where my body just couldn't handle it. So I don't, you know, who knows what the fuck happens when that's.
I think it's just the gods of bodybuilding picking on me because it's so easy. Because like, you know, when you're running late, I just grab a 16-ouncer and slam it and throw it in the garbage and walk out the door.
Yeah.
I love that. Now I'm like, shit. So, I mean, poor Mutant, I sent him my order. I was like, I'm going to need some more protein this month because I'm going to be
right.
Usual.
Okay. No, we're looking forward. I'm looking forward to what's the heaviest you've ever been?
313 is the heaviest.
Really?
Yeah. So, and I think I'm going to, I say this carefully, I'm going to surpass that easily, not easily as an effort, but my body's been heavy for so long now that like, yeah. I'm even finding approaching 290, I don't feel uncomfortable at all.
Okay.
You know, and in the past I didn't get uncomfortable till about 305. So I'm curious to see, I'm sure you know this, like every time you get heavy again, there's a new set number where all of a sudden you wake up and you're like, life sucks.
Yep.
You know, your shoes are a long way down there. You're trying to figure out how you're going to tie them, which I just don't.
right.
You know, so that's what chucks are for, people. That's what chucks are for. You knot the ends.
If you tie them just right.
Yeah, it's basically a slip-on.
It's basically
wearing velcro, but no one knows.
It's a flip-flop. It's a glorified flip-flop. Okay. I'm actually doing the opposite of you, Dusty.
Okay.
I'm actually dieting down for no reason. You look very confused.
I'm sorry, my heart hurts. Go ahead. Sheer emotion you just saw. I'm like, what?
Yeah, no, I just thought, you know, I'm not 320, 330. I'm not pushing the big body weights anymore to try to get bigger.
Right.
So why don't I just see how awesome I can look easily? You know,
right.
I just want to see, like, you know, I've never ever dieted down without a gun to my head that said I had to have striated glutes in 12.3
weeks. By a certain day, right?
You know, I've just never, the concept of dieting down to look good is so foreign to me.
Right.
Because that was not what competing was about. It was never a vanity thing.
Right.
Like, I was the bodybuilder who was totally happy being like 14% body fat at 315 and just eating my face off. I didn't give a fuck. I'd be like, I look fine. I look great. I'm 315 at 14%. Go fuck yourself.
Right.
You know, like, I didn't give a shit. And so that's why the whole like looking good for the sake of looking good is just sort of something that I've never done in 30 years of training.
Right.
It was either train and eat to get fucking huger or diet to get shredded. but there was no like, what's this casual fucking looking good shit?
See, you know, got like, nauseous the way I did just a minute. Well, what? Explain more.
Yeah, like, so, you know, and I'd meet people and they'd be like, yeah, you know, I'm just trimming down for summer. And I just look at them like, fuck. Like, and almost are, a little.
You're trimming down for winter right now.
Yeah, yeah, you know, it's just funny. So, I almost envied them a bit. I'm like, I don't know if I can diet without a show. Like,
yeah, without a reason to make this shit happen.
Yeah, that's, you know,
it's a lot harder to pass.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. So, I said, you know what, I'm going to try something a little different because I don't have a show. So, right. I can experiment. I can change things wildly from week to week to just see what happens. I don't, you know, like, there's no fear of losing a gram of muscle.
Right.
Like, you know, when you're dieting for a show, like, you aren't going to give up a gram of muscle. Like, your diet has to be fucking, if you're like 20 minutes late for your protein meal, you're irritated.
Right.
You know, like that stuff. I don't have any of that because I don't have a show.
Right.
So like the other day I ate a meal and then we went to a concert and I didn't eat for 4.5 hours. And I got home and I just ate my meal and there was no stress about it. Like I was totally fine with it. And, that's really nice, actually.
What are you doing? Like, say for like, if you guys want to go out and stuff, are you a little? Because I mean, I know for me, when I'm in prep, people are like, oh, you could eat out. I'm like, fuck you, no way.
Right.
Not gonna happen.
So that's how I've modified the diet. So I normally eat out about 3 times a week.
Right.
So I thought, you know, and my eat out choices aren't that bad. Like when I go to eat out, I usually order based on how my body weight is.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like if I'm 294.
Iron skillet.
Right. You know, like if I'm really heavy or if I'm feeling big and full, I might just order like steak and rice. But if I'm feeling like, oh, yesterday I didn't have a great pump, then I'll order a huge fucking cheat meal.
Right.
That's how I normally live. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought I'm just going to keep doing that, but I'm going to lower all my other meals, I'm going to bring the calories down low enough to see if I can make that work.
Right.
So I'm still eating out 3 times a week,
mm-hmm.
but all my other meals are just, they're small diet meals.
Right.
And I've dropped, like, I started at 292 and that was like an easy 292, like taking hardly anything.
Right.
Just like, you know, plowing 5 meals a day with a couple shakes, eating out whenever I want. And now I'm, this morning I was 275.
Wow.
And that's
how long has it been?
6 weeks.
Okay. Yeah. So you're easing it.
Yeah. And that's with no cutting supplements at all.
Right.
Not like nothing for cutting.
What cardio are you doing?
30 minutes, 3 times a week.
So I do more cardio than you while I'm growing. But that gives you a pure example of how much you're not doing anything.
Yeah. So it's just been, I'm just waiting for, you know, it to stall out or something and then I'll progress.
Yeah. For sure.
But, you know, taking very, very little supplements, nothing for cutting, you know, no, I'm not taking any clean or any fat burners or anything like that. Just dieting, you know, my meals are just way smaller, you know, a cup of rice and 8 ounces of chicken is a meal. I know that doesn't sound like much food, but then I have those 3 meals a week where I eat whatever I want.
Right.
So it seems to kind of be balancing out. And then the other day I thought, shit, I'm getting kind of light. So I ordered a whole pizza, ate it. The next day I was 1 pound lighter.
I love that shit.
And I was like, oh shit, am I already getting my body rolling like this? Like, am I already, because you know, that's like stuff that happens where you're like, oh fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's like the prep stuff where you're hoping that comes, you know?
Yep.
So yeah, we'll just see what happens. I mean, I don't know where I'm going to stop. I mean, I got people at the gym starting to comment now. Like the last week I had a lot of people come up to me and they're like, are you doing a show? They're starting to see like the face looks different. And especially like I'm the type of guy that even when I'm fat, I have veiny arms.
Right.
So my arms are just covered in like snakes now. Like,
right. Yeah, for sure.
It's an electrical wiring problem just everywhere. And, So people are like, what's going on? And I'm like, I'm actually just dieting for fun. And then the phrase itself rattles around in my brain.
See the face that I did. Okay. I wish I could have the view of everyone who's watching this. When you said that, they're like, I could do like a screenshot of everybody, right, as they're watching
and
that.
And I do have to thank Seth Ferrosi for giving me, he had a quote the other day on his Instagram. And I was like, it summed up part of my reasoning. He's like, diet down a bit and do a bit of cardio to increase your fuckability.
Fuckability. I like this. Nice phrase.
That's what he said. He's like, you know, you got to get your fuckability high, you know? You got to get that cardio in there a little bit, you know, get the body weight down a little, you know, tighten up the core.
Awesome. There's two ways to do that. That's either by trimming down a little bit or making more money. I got you.
Right. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Fuckability is altered by your income, Dusty, which is maybe what, maybe how you've been living your life.
Grace right here. Thank God.
That's why Dusty's driven to make the coin.
I've got to do it.
Hey guys, why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com. And use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows.
So I got, we got to move to the second topic here, Dusty. We've caught everyone up on us. So now let's talk about one of the main things that I've had people ask us to talk about is what makes for a good client.
Yes.
And I think that the perfect client, if you had to describe the perfect client, would be someone who, I think it comes down to them, A, having an understanding of what it's like to really, really want something, mm-hmm. and put everything they have into it. So I find the best clients are usually people who played sports, know what it's like to lose and know what it's like to win.
Right.
And understand the difference in how it makes them feel. And that's part of their motivation.
Right. Drives them every day.
Yeah. You know, like I often said, I don't know if anyone can be a good bodybuilder if they've never run for their life. And
it's a bad point. I mean, you got to expand on that for others, but I already know what you're saying.
Yeah. And I guess it's sort of a football reference. Like, you got the ball and there's fucking a whole team of guys trying to crush you and you got open field in front of you and you're running for your fucking life.
Right.
Or you're the only guy chasing that motherfucker. And if you don't get him, your team loses.
Right.
Running for your fucking life. And that's something that I know how that feels. I was a linebacker in high school. So that football reference gets me, right. You know, I know what it's like to be on the goal line. And I know that running back's getting the ball and he's coming right up the two hole. And that's going to, and it's, if he gets in, I'm going to be the one that looks like a fucking idiot.
Right.
I know it's a team sport, but we're on the 1 yard line and I know they're running it.
Yeah. That's where it becomes a Ron sport for a moment.
Yeah. You know, like when you're on the 1 yard line, it's probably not the corner's problem.
Right. Yeah.
You know, they might do that, but chances are he's probably going to get through the play without looking like a dummy.
Yeah, yeah. Only the Seahawks don't let Lynch run from that. We're going to let throw it.
Yes, yes. I had to parlay that. Yeah, yeah. That's where Scott can insert the NFL clip of them blowing that play.
Exactly.
With no licensing whatsoever.
We don't need it. Not enough people are watching yet.
Yeah, so I don't know. I just get really excited when I get a client who knows that. I'm not saying they all have to, because I've had fantastic clients that just literally stepped into this world knowing nothing. You know, like some of the transformation people I've helped that just blow the doors off some of the people who think they're hardcore. You know, so it can come from other places. But I think when it comes to getting a client who's actually going to be a good bodybuilder who might win stuff, you know, mm-hmm. that type of thing. Yeah. I think that there's something in you that has to drive you, and it has to be almost desperate and like, you know, like just so, because when you're in those moments, you know, that running for your life moment, there is nothing else. Like that's as alone as you're ever going to be. Right. Like it's just that the adrenaline pumping, and you have to kind of spend a bit of time in that zone for like a couple months.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And so I get excited when I find someone that I think has that in them, you know, and I can see it. I've seen it in guys, like, you know, you see the young guy in the gym that just trains like a fucking animal, and you're like, that guy's got something in him that's making him do that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree 100%.
And I think I also relate to that because when I was a kid, like I trained, you know, I was the type of kid that always wanted to be like, I didn't compare myself to the other kids. Right.
Right.
So like when I did martial arts, I went to the men's class.
Right.
When I rode freestyle BMX, I was only 13 or 14, but I rode with the 16, 17 year old guys.
Right.
They were better.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, when I skied moguls, all the guys I skied with were, you know, a lot of the guys I'd hook up with in the mountains were, you know, they were like 19, 20, like they're drinking beers and I'm like 15 skiing with them.
Right.
And then when I was joined the gym, it was the same thing. Like all the guys that were squatting five plates in the corner, I was hanging out over there going, fuck, you guys squat on Mondays.
Yeah. You know, I'll be here.
So when I see those kids in the gym, I'm like, ah, fuck, you know, there's something there they can work with if they want to.
Yeah. I hear you 100%.
So what about you? What are some things that you think make a good client?
I think the first thing that I drive with people, and whether I ask them verbally or figure it out, is what's their driving force. Like you already said, what pushes them to do it? I find that people who, the reason there's been an influx of people who don't have the it factor that I've seen is they're driven by the fact that bodybuilding is cool now. Competing's cool. So they want to do it because that's what people do, versus when it was a cult thing. And when you got into bodybuilding, you were a little bit like, why are you doing that? I remember when my dad first, you know, because I went from hockey, obviously a very well-known thing, into bodybuilding, he was kind of like, what? Why? Like, you can't even understand it. You know what I mean? Whereas now it's become a thing. So I find what it is when people do this because they fucking love it with everything they have. Those are the people who I've always found are going to see the greatest results. You know, because they're literally doing it just for themselves and no other reason. You know, it pushes them every day. I don't have to ask. You know, I get a lot of people who, I actually used this line the other day because one of my female clients, actually, she said, hey, you know, well, she sent me a picture of a weird oatmeal and it had some protein and fats. And what do you think about this? And I said, oh, is this something you like? Like, is this so you can, is this so we can take away food elsewhere? What's the goal here? And she said, well, I have trouble eating and I'm just thinking, maybe if I put this in, I can compensate for what I don't do. And I was like, well, how does compensating work with the men in your life? Is that working out for them? Or do you find that helps that much? And she laughed and I said, compensation doesn't work. Like, do what you're supposed to do, the end. You're trying to find an easy route. You know what I mean? And I think that's the big one right there, is people who just want to know, how do I get there? They don't want to know the fast way. They don't want an easy way. None of that shit. You know what I'm saying? Give me 2 seconds. Give me the charger for this. My computer's decided.
Oh, I thought you were doing a product placement like Ian.
It happens. Like, So anyways, it's basically, though, that's the big thing, is I really think what you kind of nailed is the majority of it. But it's really just, for me, it's also if they're obsessive compulsive. When people send me pictures from different locations at different times, when they check in 3 days late because, oh, they thought that this would be a better idea, I'm like, no. Like, you know, I'm so obsessed that when I was helping with Chris the last year, I found that the gym, sorry, I'm plugging in my damn computer. I like the lighting in the gym. So I also like to have my pictures first thing in the morning. I paid someone to meet me at the gym at 4:30 in the morning every time Chris wanted pictures, because I did them in the men's locker room. Like,
yeah,
that's not, if you say that to a bodybuilder, they're like, oh
yeah.
Anyone else would be like, what? Why don't you take them to your house? I don't like the light. It's not perfect. it's just like you guys already saw with the lighting last week. It's not, it's a natural lighting, so it's inconsistent. That's not good enough for me because I want him to know what he's dealing with. So right. when I see people that are never late with their check-ins, I never have to follow up with, what did you weigh this week? Oh, I forgot to say that. Like, they literally copy paste what I tell them needs to be in there. And you'll see my words and then their answers every week for 2 years straight.
Yeah.
These are the people who are going to go somewhere with this. I have, and what sucks is I've got a lot of people who have the ability, but there's always, I didn't want to send them because of this or that. I'm just like, when you're obsessive, and I tell all my clients up front, I will not reach out to you. Your pictures are in 5 days. If you don't send them, I'm not texting you. It's not my fucking right. problem. I can't want your goal more than you do.
Right.
So maybe after 2 weeks, I might reach out to you and be like, so you're dead? Are we done? What's happening? I just took out the last payment.
Right.
I mean, seriously, that is the difference. So I think the biggest thing is just how bad people want it, and stop looking for an easy fucking way to get it because there isn't one.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, I think the moral of the story on all this is you got to do the work. So everyone's looking for a way to avoid doing the work. I like the sadistic ones that are like, what if there's a way I could work harder to do this? You know?
Yeah. That one more quick addition to exactly what you just said is, you know, I've had a lot of guys that understood this, but, you know, right now I got this one client, I'll give him a shout out, and his name's Morgan. But Morgan, when he first came to me, I think it was like 2012, I've been working with him. But he came to me and he's like, I want to be a bodybuilder someday. Right? He didn't assume he already was one because he worked out.
Right.
And he always talked in terms of understanding, like, hey, you can tell me when I'm ready for a show.
Right.
Like, and so, like, I don't know how many years that's going to be. And I remember when I started talking with him, I'm like, well, I don't think, you know, if you really want to be a bodybuilder, you shouldn't compete for like a few years. And he's like, okay. You know, so it was just like that sort of thing. And then he did a show and smoked it, you know, so we were super happy about that. And that was like fucking almost 3 years ago, I think.
Right.
And he's still working for his next show.
Right.
You know, he's like up into the 250s now. He's like a monster now. But that's the awareness that this is going to take a long time, you know? So sometimes people hire you and they're like, hey, you know, like when someone comes to you short term, they're like, hey, I'm 14 weeks out and I really need help. I'm like, okay, I'll help you as much as I can here. But like, this is 14 weeks you're giving me, you know, it's a little bit different.
How you already have in shape.
Right. Right. You know, we're just going to try to get this in shape, but when you get a guy who's like, hey, you know, like in 6 or 7 years, I'd like to be a big threat at nationals. It's nice to have that sort of, like, oh, okay, you're in this for the long haul. We can really do something progressive here.
Right. Well, so, I think that a lot of that, too, is this is the only sport where almost everyone you talk to is going to be a pro. It's just an assumption that they're going to be a pro and that they're we keep adding divisions to make it easier for people to be competitive. Like when you and I started bodybuilding, I was 186 pounds, 5 foot, almost 11, no muscle, wasn't even peeled out of my mind, but there was only bodybuilding.
Right.
So if you compete, you're going to go step up with those guys. And I was standing next to 5'3", 198. And you were just going to, you knew you were going to have to put in your time to become one of them. Whereas now a lot of people are confusing like classic for small bodybuilding, which it is not.
Right.
You know, guys with my terrible structure are like, I'm going to do classic. I'm like, you look like a trash can.
Right.
You just need to get bigger. You're a bodybuilder. I know you got small arms and whatever, but you know, so it's just that weird assumption that everyone's going to be a pro the day they start. And I'm like, you don't even know if you like, I don't know if you like bodybuilding. Like I knew when I started bodybuilding, I liked working out.
Right.
I liked muscle. I did my first prep. I've told this a million times. I said I would never do it again because I fucking hate it. I'm a fat kid. I want macaroni and cheese. I want to go to In-N-Out Burger.
Right.
And I literally said, 5 weeks into the diet, like, I'm never going to do this again, but I'm going to finish.
Right.
You know, and then here we are, you know. Obviously. But, yeah, no, I think we're on the same page. The biggest thing with the clients is they have to want it and be willing to do whatever it takes to get there.
Well, that brings us to topic number three on our list here. all these topics, by the way, guys, you know, we get a lot of messages. You know, we're really happy to get a lot of messages from you all, you know, asking us to hit on certain topics. So when we get something that sort of collects, like, you know, a lot of people asking for this thing, it sort of makes a list. So discuss what it takes to go pro for people with less than phenomenal genetics. And it was kind of hard to word that, but I think there's a lot of people that think they can go pro who don't realize, you know, like, we don't want to use genetics as a crutch, but they're a reality.
Right.
And I think there's people out there, they do not have any understanding of how absolutely fucking unbelievably talented the best in the world are.
Yeah.
They think that that body is the result of just more of what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, training and eating and supplementation and
more drugs. You know, all this.
And more drugs. I'll just do that. But no, no, that's Kai Greene.
Yeah. He was born.
Yeah. Those guys, they're not the same. They're the Jordans, mm-hmm, of the gene pool. And I always knew that I was not a Jordan of the gene pool. You know, I was a tall, skinny kid with long limbs that everyone was like, oh yeah, you're over 6 feet. There's just no pros that are over 6 feet, except for Paul Dillett.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know,
not you.
Yeah. You know, as a 16-year-old kid, you're not really looking towards Paul Dillett as a realistic version of what you're going to look like anytime soon. So, you know, I had a lot of people tell me I would never turn pro, and I did understand the realistic side of this. I was like, you know I'm never going to be a Kevin Leverone, but I certainly think I could be a national champion and earn a seat at the table and earn a pro card and be a good Canadian bodybuilder. And, you know, sometimes I laugh at that and I think maybe I didn't set my sights high enough. You know, like, I was too realistic. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I think it's just that I always understood the genetics side of it. You know, like, I would see the kids that would just train for fun and their arms would just blow up.
Right.
And I was the one who was like the serious bodybuilder, right? And their arms would blow up bigger than mine. And then they'd just not train for 3 months and they'd shrink that down and they'd hit a few workouts and they'd blow up bigger than mine. And I was like, okay, there's some people that just aren't normal.
Right.
And, you know, then you scale that up to like the Phil Heath of the world.
Yeah.
And I just think the average person doesn't quite get that there's like that radical divide. Mm-hmm. And obviously with genetics can mean a million things in bodybuilding. Like, you know, some people say Branch Warren doesn't have good genetics, but fuck, he has unbelievably awesome genetics for getting big and ripped.
Yep.
And he had fantastic structural genetics to start with that people see when he was young. You know, like, he's pushed his physique, his waist did get a little wider. He's you know, got beat up as he got older, which is just a testament to Branch's stubbornness and his work ethic.
Yeah.
Just makes me respect him more that he was continue winning with that physique too.
Yep.
But to say he doesn't have good genetics is just completely clueless.
Yeah. Yeah. You just have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. So, I mean, what's your take on a, you know, kind of a regular person thinking about turning pro?
Well, I mean, when I think about the question, I think number one, like you said, there's levels to genetics, right? And I think that that's something that I've been smacked in the face with before too, because I've made a comment like, well, you know, I got terrible genetics. And what I mean is in comparison to Phil Heath, not in comparison to all the people that can't turn pro. Like, I, you know, just like you, I can hold muscle mass like no one's business. My body's ability to handle the training. I mean, I get people asking all the time, what do you do for your lower back pain? I'm like, what low back pain?
Yeah, that's what, another one, resilience to injury.
What knee pain?
Yeah.
No, my blood work is phenomenal always.
Exactly.
Even me knowing what I do, I look at it and I don't take nearly what a lot of people do, but I look at my blood work sometimes. I send it to Dante and we kind of laugh. I'm like, I don't know. It's just always good. Like, my body is genetically good for all of those things, but structurally, I'm not genetically good. So I think that's one factor too, is understanding the levels of genetics before you say that. And if you're someone like us, then here's my answer to every single person on the planet. Become obsessive compulsive. Execute everything perfectly every single day and watch what happens. First step for you guys that, you know, and Ron, you know this, we could go on for hours, but I get cycles from guys that are so organized, so way overdosed, so many question marks and asking about this MK643, whatever the fuck I've never heard of. All of these things. And then I look over their diet and they're like, yeah, I eat a lot. And I'm like, well, where is it?
Right.
You don't know what you eat. So what I tell people is, cool, pull out all the shit. Go on 200 milligrams. Now we are going to figure out your diet until you're growing on that. Once you're growing on that, I already know what doubling your test will do. But see, nobody has the balls to just figure that shit out, because let's be straight, drugs hide mistakes.
Yeah.
Take enough drugs, you're going to grow anyways. But the funny thing is, you're not growing like you could have.
Yeah. So, and it's not going to be the same permanent foundational muscle.
Yeah. Build that shit up. And that's why I laugh, because people, they never even know if I'm on or off.
Right.
Because my weight don't change that much and my strength doesn't change. You know what I lose, Ron? A couple reps.
Right.
405 on incline becomes 6.
Right.
It was 8 to 9 before. That's it. Right. It's not that I can't do 405. You know what I'm saying? So the biggest thing is, again, become obsessive compulsive with all that. And that way, that's what's cool. It covers you no matter what your genetics are. If you are a freak, guess what? Kai Greene is obsessive compulsive. You ever seen that fucking dude eat, train, sleep? Remember we're on the road? He had a 3-hour routine at the end of a long day. He would go in, he would stretch for like forever. Then he'd go train, then he'd do an hour of cardio afterwards every day. Remember when we'd see him at McFit and shit? That was his routine. Adam used to have to go with him and wait for 3 or 4 hours while he did all that. You think he was missing meals?
Yeah. No.
But he's
he wasn't shortening anything because he was on the road or anything. It was just lockdown.
Yeah, and but then you factor that in, and then he's doing all that right and has genetics. Well, then you take someone like me and does the same thing. I'm going to take my genetics as far as I can. The problem with everybody is they've got an urgency for the long-term goal, right? Everybody wants to be a pro tomorrow, but no urgency for what it takes to get there. I'm going to be a pro next year. Cool. How's your eating? Well, I've messed up 4 days this week. Well, then you're not going to be a fucking pro.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's just really simple to me in a world where we want to overcomplicate, and coaches do that to the game. Eat your food every fucking day. Live, sleep, train. Everything is bodybuilding for 6 months and look at your physique. Guaranteed, no matter what your genetics are, you're going to look in the mirror and go, holy shit.
That's exactly what you just said is actually what I spent probably, 15 years laser focused on. And my mentality, and like I said, maybe it was less imperfect. Maybe I could have done better if I would have had a different mentality. But my mentality was always kind of, I don't have the genetics for the muscle size and the roundness that a lot of these guys have. My frame's too big in some ways, but what strengths do I have? Super wide shoulders, narrow waist, good shape, balance. And I thought if I can just maximize the tissue on my body, I can beat a lot of guys with my strengths.
Yep.
And so I would always say, well, I can't give anything up that I can control.
Right.
Right. So my diet was always ridiculous. Like, I remember sitting and thinking, I'm in my 20s, right? And I remember sitting and thinking, have I had less than 6 meals a day for the last year? And I couldn't think of a day. And this is like a 26-year-old kid who's like, no, I had 6 meals every single day, 365 days this year.
Yep.
You know, and that was a young kid that, should have been out partying or something, right?
Yeah.
And I was just fucking locked in. I'm like, have I missed a workout in 5 years? Nope. That's like a kid in his 20s.
Yep.
Who hadn't missed a workout in 5 fucking years. Like not one fucking workout. Like, and I, see people like, oh yeah, I didn't train last week. I had a few exams. And I'm like, I went to college. I wrote final exams and then went straight to the fucking gym. Or I went to the gym and then went to an exam.
Right.
I wrote exams during peak week of my first show.
In prep.
guzzling water out of a gallon jug, writing a fucking business exam. Yep. So I just always had that because I knew that was something I could control. And if I just did that, I would probably beat a lot of guys.
Yep, for sure.
It's like that war of attrition sort of thing, right? It's like,
but I think
I'll bleed to death, but you're going to bleed to death first.
Right. But I think that's the mentality you got to have, though, because, you know, I look at the same thing, but say to myself, man, how many guys have I beaten that if they had my brain, I would never have beaten?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, Chris Aceto has told me that many times. I won't drop any names, but he's like, man, if he had your head, he'd be Mr. Olympia.
I've heard the same thing from Chris.
You know, it's just one of those things where it's like, I think that people don't realize that is that mental piece is everything. And instead of, you know, and I can't remember, I think you actually posted it or shared it, but somebody put this up and it was phenomenal. Instead of thinking about what you're going to do when you're a pro, think about what you need to do to become a pro.
To look like a pro, yeah.
And that's it, man. I mean, and the other thing is watch. I think people don't have a vision of what it even takes to look like one. I can tell you that, so I won my first overall in 2008. I started very, very late in bodybuilding. And everyone's like, oh, cool. And it was in October. Are you going to do nationals? I was like, no, I'll get smoked. Well, you just won with straight first. It's a different ballgame.
Yeah.
So I literally back then, remember MD used to take pictures at every show?
Yeah.
So what I did is every Sunday morning, I'd look at every show that happened. I'd go straight to the overall winner. And I'd say, could I beat that guy?
Yeah.
Every single time. Once I went through about 4 months where I knew I would beat him or be right there, I said, okay, I'm ready for a national level show. And I reached out to Aceto and said, okay, I want to do the USAs.
Right.
So I knew that would be what determined if I could do this or not. I had a view of what those guys looked like, and I wasn't there yet. You know, and then that's why, just like you, the very first national level show I did, I won. It was like, okay, junior nationals, win, then probably the heaviest competition, super heavyweight I've ever seen. I took fifth at my first one. It was like, okay, good call. I would have been, you know, 26th in 2008.
Right.
You know, I think that realism plays a role as well, you know.
I did the same thing. I remember I won the provincials in 99. Mm-hmm. And the nationals were in Edmonton that year. So, like, I wouldn't have had to travel.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, well, you must be doing nationals. And I was like, no. And they're like, but they're here and you're shredded and you just want to show like commandingly. And I'm like, yeah, but I haven't seen the nationals since I was a little kid. Like I'd seen the 91 nationals when I was 15.
Right.
And then I hadn't seen the nationals since. So I was like, I need to see it. I need to sit there in the second row and I need to look at the guys I'm going to be competing against and pick them apart. And I have to know exactly what I'm doing. Uh-huh. Like I refused to go in blind of anything. So I sat in the crowd and I watched the nationals that year and I thought, fuck, I can do very well here.
Right.
And I came back the following year and got second in the super heavies.
You know what's funny about that similar story? The very first time I went to the USAs, I went with the guy who owned the business I eventually bought. And we're sitting in the audience. We're there watching for Troy Alves when he turned pro that year. And there's this monster sitting in front of us, just this freak. And Chris, we're sitting there watching, and Bruce, my friend, he nudges me. He says, you know you're ready for this level when you can compete with that guy. And I'm just looking at this guy, like, shaking my head. I mean, I barely look like a bodybuilder, you know. And it was Sean Allen.
Oh, yeah.
You know. So I just remember, like, looking at this guy thinking, holy fuck. So fast forward to 2010. I wake up on Sunday morning to a text message from Bruce. They said, I guess you're ready. And I was like, what? And I scroll down and I see a picture. Sean Allen took seventh in that show and I took fifth.
Oh, that's funny.
And I was like, holy shit. I didn't even register backstage. I was like, wow, that's exactly what you said. And it just happened, you know?
Yeah, I know that. So, those moments are good. This sort of leads into the next thing on our list that you and I talked about a few things, and it was, do you think it's good that you did not turn pro sooner as far as your career in the industry? This might apply more to me.
I don't know. You got me beat, but it felt long for me too.
Yeah, it did feel long for you because you did a lot of shows to turn pro, but I had a long time. And then, you know, I think the answer to that is I'm sort of a butterfly affected guy, you know, like I wouldn't change anything in my life because that would change everything in your life, you know?
Right.
And, you know, like I had like, let's say 2007 when I won the super heavies, I could have easily won the pro card that year. The judges just chose to go with the middleweight. You know, I mean, you look at the photos and you're like, they could have given you a pro card, no problem, you know?
Right.
But I didn't get one that year. And I think back and I'm like, you know, maybe that was one of the best things that ever happened to me. 2007 was, you know, Facebook was just basically the only thing we had. Bodybuilding hadn't become social yet. The only way you really could make money in bodybuilding in 2007 was to win a check at a show or get a big time contract.
Right.
And I don't think I would have done either.
Right.
So, I mean, maybe it would have just helped my coaching business to turn pro early, but I, you know, or maybe it would have helped me, you know, they say take a fish, put them in a bigger tank and it'll grow. Yeah. You know, maybe I would have, you know, turning pro might have pushed me to the next level of, you know, developing my physique. Maybe I would have done things in a smarter way. Who knows what path it would have taken, but I wouldn't want to change anything for, you know, for where my life is now.
Right.
So, I mean, it's hard for me to ever really regret anything because I'm just not a regret guy. So I would say that I'm glad I didn't turn pro early because most of the guys that turn pro before the social media age, most of them, that was kind of the retirement of them mm-hmm. in every way,
right.
you know, whereas, you know, I turned pro really late in my life at 39 years old, you know, at kind of the, you know, during the social media age. So I was able to, you know, remain relevant with Mutant, keep my contract going, all that sort of stuff,
right.
which, I mean, I don't think in 2007, anyone who was done competing was contracted.
Yeah, sure.
You know, it was kind of the end of that era.
Yeah. No, I agree with everything you say. I think the parlay that I see with this, number one, the easy answer for me is it was good for me. And the reason is because it kept me a front runner. And people knew any show that I put my name in, I could win. And so people were watching. I mean, you would literally, people were watching for what's Dusty Hanshaw going to bring.
Same thing.
You know,
yeah.
Had I turned pro in 2010 and then, of course, done a pro show and gotten smoked, which I would have, that's over right then and there. So then it's up to me to just grind it out and keep going and build up. And I would have, because I love bodybuilding. So you and I are a rare breed. But it would have hurt what is now my career, which is social media and stuff. I mean, when I turned pro, I had enough followers and fans on Facebook and those things. There were people that didn't even know I wasn't a pro already, which shows you have fans that aren't even really in bodybuilding, because everyone knows USA's is not a pro show, but not everyone in bodybuilding knows that, not everybody overall. You know, so my parlay with that is also, I think some people nowadays getting pro cards should turn them down. And the reason for that is, you know, in that moment, it's exciting. You won, you got your pro card, yay, your career's over. And you might do one show, you're going to get your ass handed to you. It's not going to be that fun. No one's going to know your name. You're going to get to wave to the audience at the night show. Why not battle it out and continue enjoying bodybuilding the way you like to? You know, we went to the USA's a couple weeks ago, and there were multiple pro cards in multiple divisions that I'm like, man, she should turn that down. Like, you've got something here, but you're not in shape. You're not big enough. And in a year, you're going to come back and be in the mix again. You might not even win next year. And then in another year, next thing you know, you're going to be ready to be a pro, and then you take it. You know, and Jose, of course, being a good friend, but also someone everyone knows, Jose turned down his pro card, I believe, 7 times. Or no, I'm sorry. What it is according to today's standards, he would have won it 8 times.
Right.
But did turn it down a couple of times, and his reasoning was,
I thought he turned it down legitimately four. He won four weight classes at Nationals, right?
Yeah, well, he won 4 weight classes at Nationals, 4 weight classes at the USA's. Nationals would have given him one every single time.
But he turned his card down there multiple times and came back to win.
And his reason was he loved bodybuilding. So he knew that since there was no 202 class back then, his career would be over if he took his, you know, his win as a lightweight. So what he would do is he would do the USA's, he would do the Nationals, he'd move up a weight class, do the USA's, do the Nationals, move up a weight class, and he just kept winning. And everyone was mad at him, but he's like, I'm not even winning the same class. I'm going up, you know? And then finally, when there was a 202, there was somewhere for him to go. So he's like, great. I don't have to give up bodybuilding to be a pro. Whereas right. in the past, he was thinking, if I take my pro card, I'm essentially stopping bodybuilding. And I think a lot of people do that now. You know, I'm thinking, I get it. You can put it on your Instagram profile, but who, what? Like, you know, nobody cares. So I think a lot of people should really look at the pros And if you win as a lightweight, say, man, that's awesome. You, no one can ever take that away from you. You won the USA's as a lightweight bodybuilder. Now move up a class and try to do it again. And don't lose the thing you truly love, which is bodybuilding, in exchange for a pro card.
So I don't know if I ever told you this story, Dusty. I have told it before. But I think it was around 2011 or 12. Mm-hmm. I might be wrong with the year. When did they start giving a second place pro card at Nationals?
I think it was 12, yeah.
Okay, so in 2012, we'll just say.
Yeah.
Please don't come at us, history police.
Yeah.
I got a call from the guy who was the president of the Canadian Bodybuilding Association.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, hey, I just had a meeting with, you know, some IFBB guys, and I want to offer you a pro card. And I said, oh, what do you mean? And he goes, well, they're going to be given second place pro cards at the Nationals this year in the United States. And I think at the time I had 7 seconds.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, because 2012, I think 2012 was my 7th second.
Right.
And then I also had the weight class win.
Yep.
In 07. So I'd won the supers already. So he said, well, you have a national title as a super heavy.
Right.
And they give all the weight classes pro cards at Nationals now. And now USA's get, what, 4 cards or something as of that year?
Yeah. Yep.
So, and then he said, and then plus the Nationals give second place pro cards to everyone. So by today's standard, you would have been a pro in 2000.
Right.
My very first Nationals.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, you've come second 7 times and you won the supers. And so we just want to give you a pro card. And I actually turned it down.
Right.
Because I said, there's no way I want to get my pro card any other way than on stage.
Right. Yeah. You got a phone call pro card.
Yeah. Just, it would have been like a kind of a retirement lifetime achievement award to me. That's how it would have felt.
Right.
I hear you. I was like, the only way I want a pro card is I want to be covered in tan, almost naked in front of 1,000 people.
Right. No, I totally get that though. And that's awesome. That's a badass story. It's hysterical to me that I haven't heard it yet.
Yeah. But I guess the main point of the story is that I didn't even hesitate for a second. Like, mm-hmm. And I think in that moment, I realized that it wasn't the pro card that I was actually after. It mm-hmm. was the fact that nothing beats winning.
Right. No, for sure.
You know, a pro card, no pro card. I mean, I think back to the best days of my life when I was my absolute happiest and proud of myself. And they were like some of the amateur shows I won, because winning is winning. It doesn't matter what level you're at. At the time, there's nothing that beats it. You know what I mean?
For sure. Well, I would say every show I'm prepping for is my Olympia.
Yeah. That's how I always felt.
Yeah.
Oh, like I said, I used to train with the older guys. I used to kind of do everything with the older guys. So mm-hmm. I never compared myself to, you know, the other kids at the gym. I was looking in the magazines and I was like, this guy's my height and he weighs 250 pounds. So I have to be 250 pounds.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
You know, that sort of mentality. So that was always the case. But as far as turning pro cards down, I mean, I think a lot of people should be possibly considering then that. I mean, they're giving away so many now that it you know, like back when they gave 1 card per show, everyone who got a card really did deserve it and could go do something with it. But I think now, you know, I mean, it's times have changed.
Yeah, I think the only time that I have a little asterisk next to that is if the card is really all you want.
Yes.
If you wanted that, then hell yes. You just achieved your goal. Take that bitch and run. Some guys take the card and never compete. And everyone's got their own goal. But if you're not done with bodybuilding, just consider it and ask yourself straight up, like, am I ready? Or am I the kind of person that can now turn around and grind for 2 or 3 years without stepping on stage or with knowing I'm going to get my ass kicked? To grind up, you know, and as I'm saying this, I can only imagine how many people are thinking, well, geez, Dusty, why didn't you turn down your card? Well, the answer is simple. I was always in that mix every show. So I always was going to either win or be right there at that point. So it was time to go up. I just knew now that, you know, now that I've went up, I'm back to being a minnow and these are fucking sharks.
Yeah.
You know, And that's okay to make that step. The difference is you're already there. You know, like I said, at the USA's there were some that I was just like, come on now. Like even their coaches, I feel like it's your job to at least suggest like, hey, that was awesome. You beat every, I mean, this is the scary part to me. It was one of them took a second in a pro card. It was in one of the classes that did that. And I'm thinking, you didn't even win your class and you know you're way off and you're looking at the pros and you don't look like them. Really?
Yeah.
Like you're celebrating the fact that not enough people showed up for you to lose.
Not right.
Beat anybody. You know what I'm saying? Right. That's like, it's like praying for a class where no one, like in the States, let's go do nationals and let's just hope no one else shows up and I win. They right. will give you a card at 280 pounds, 26% body fat, if you're the only guy.
Yeah.
You get it, you know? So, yeah, I don't know. I just think some people should think about and just really more think, like you said, and I think you nailed it. It wasn't the card. And getting the card was great because you achieved it. And I remember you and I talked about this before. You won the card in Masters, but until the Supers were done, you weren't happy because you wanted to know you were extremely competitive in the Supers as well. You didn't get the asterisk Masters Pro card and took ninth in the Supers.
Yeah, that was a really big deal. So for those of you that don't know what happened, so I took 2014 off because I just had my knee was just fucking brutal. I could hardly train. And in 2015, I thought, okay, my knee's good enough to do this, I think. And I called Chris and I said, you know, this is my last nationals. I'm going to do the men's open and I'm going to do the Masters and we're going to find out what I got left. And Chris said, okay, let's do it. And so I won the Masters, I got the pro card, but then the super heavy finals was next. And, I think that was probably the most scared I've ever been because I knew I was right at the top of the class, but there's always that fear that you're going to land fourth.
Right.
Or, you know, maybe the judges just didn't really like your look, or maybe you looked better in the Masters and then you watered over for the Supers and you're going to like, you don't know in the day. And my nightmare was to get beat by someone who wasn't a pro that day.
Right.
Well, it turns out after beating him a couple times, I couldn't stop the genetic onslaught of Paulo Almeida. And that was Paulo's year. Paulo showed up. Obviously, you know, he improved every single year. I remember beating him a couple times and thinking, shit, this guy's just a few years away from, you know, it all happening.
Right.
Because you could see genetics like Paulo's. You see them a fucking mile away.
Yeah, sure.
And it was Paulo's year. He showed up. He won the Supers. And I played second to him.
Right.
And so I knew that I could leave the show a pro because the only other guy that could beat me that day was a pro.
Right.
And that was just the best way to close out my amateur career was, you know, knowing that I had, you know, a class win, 8 seconds, and the Masters title, and that I was still relevant as a super heavy,
yeah, you know. Sure.
So that was a lot of stress. That was a long day, Dusty, waiting for that super class because I knew that if I got third in that class, mm-hmm. it would fucking not sit with me. It would be very, very difficult for me. And it was a competitive class. Like the guy who got third was a monster.
Right.
And I just thought, fuck, you know, we're going to see how this turns out.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. Yeah, man. So next on the list is Coach's Corner. So we're going to kind of rapid fire some questions here to wrap the show up. We're stealing Coach's Corner, kind of a Canadian hockey
Don Cherry.
Reference. A little Don Cherry hockey reference for Dusty. You know, we're trying to think of a name for our kind of rapid fire Q&A at the end. And I said, this fucking call Coach's Corner. So you're going to start wearing the big colorful ties, aren't you?
Absolutely. The big knot at the top and the tall neckline on the guys.
Start
check
out Don like, Cherry. Start saying some borderline senile 70-year-old things. We have to cut the commercial.
I fucking love that guy.
So real quick, I got some questions here from Big Dave Howler. West Side versus the World Review. Did you see the movie yet?
I did. Yeah, it was awesome.
When did you watch it?
I watched it about 2 months ago on a flight. And okay. I was locked into that thing. It was awesome.
I just watched it on Netflix last weekend.
Okay.
What would you how would you review it? Just.
Oh, I mean, the quick review is just, I had no idea how much he changed the game.
And
the research that went into finding out you know, about the chains and then the, and then using the bands. And I mean,
the Russian textbooks.
Yeah. I mean, baffled my brain to realize, especially when you see the guy in the movie, he's just this old decrepit, you know, dude. He just looks like a fucking ballroom brawler. And he was a half mad scientist behind the scenes, figuring this shit out, making the equipment. Yeah, it was just blew my mind, man.
He invented the glued ham rays. Pioneered chains and bands.
Because he broke his back or some shit.
Broke his fucking back and wanted to squat again, so he invented a piece of equipment to rehab himself.
But everybody does.
Yeah, and just some of the fucking dudes, like, I loved all the quotes in there. Like, when they were talking about how they went to that meet and they realized that the guys that were banding stuff were winning.
Yeah.
And they're like, so we just went back to gym. We fucking banded everything. And then we'd band something up. And the first guy to go would just get crushed, and we'd go, oh, fuck, I'd take some of these bands off.
That's not the right one.
I just, that one that was at Hoff, that the guy with the 3,000 plus total.
Yeah.
Who was talking about how he's like, yeah, I dropped a 900-pound bench on my head. Knocked me out cold. Yeah, so if you guys haven't seen West Side versus the World, I definitely recommend it. You got a Coach's Corner question there for me?
Yes, I do. Let's see. I got a few of them here, so I'm going to pick them through. Okay. This one's a little multi-part, and you'll run with it quick. What's it actually like to be really big? I'm talking about when you're like your biggest. What daily tasks became difficult? What was your grocery bill like? And then at what point do women go from looking at a guy that's got a physique and going, oh, hey, to, ooh, that's too big?
Well, yeah, so the heaviest I've ever been technically is 333 morning weight.
That's
so at 333, at just under 6'1", you are humongous in a sweatshirt. Like, you fill up everything you're standing around. You're constantly really hot. Like, you could wear a t-shirt in 0 degree freezing weather, and it doesn't phase you. Like, you're just radiating fucking heat. People that sit next to you, the side of their face turns red and their arm turns red. Like, seriously, I'd sit beside someone on a plane and we'd get off the plane and, like, it would be a buddy of mine or something. And it'd be like, my fucking arm is red and
from
hot.
The heat coming off of your heat. Body.
Yeah. The discomfort with food, you just get so used to it. And that's probably the thing that I'm the most shocked about now that I'm lighter and I eat less and I manage my body differently, is I look at the food I used to eat. Like, I pulled up the diets. I'm like, holy fuck. I don't know. That mentally overwhelms me that I used to eat that. Grocery bill. You know what? I think I was always pretty good with my grocery bill. I think I always kept it cheap. I buy, you know, the generic oatmeal, big bags of rice, you know, did the Costco shit.
Right.
I mean, you're spending hundreds and hundreds of dollars a week, but I think my main vice was that I probably spent fucking 20 grand at restaurants a year.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Like, for sure.
I was the type of guy, especially when I used to bartend and I had cash in my wallet all the time. I'd eat at the Keg twice a week. That's like a big steakhouse here. You're looking at a $50 meal, right? I eating out was like how some people blow their money at the bar on the weekend.
Yeah, yours was food.
Mine was eating out. Like, that was people would be like, oh, I drank, you know, I spent $500 on Coke and booze this weekend, and I'd be like, I ate out every day.
I too waste money like an idiot.
I too blow money, you know. So yeah, going to Costco, I'd be leaning on the cart like, oh fuck, you know, your feet hurt a lot. But at the same time, I was like so focused that I wasn't like complaining at the time. I saw it was like acceptable,
right?
You know, but yeah, just it's a lot of work to be that big. You know, especially you got to keep your fuckability up, Dusty. We got to come full circle back to this.
Which is part of his question that I was going to hold out till the end. But part of his question was, and how is sex affected by being 333?
Well, I'm a very stubborn guy. I don't ever quit anything. You know, Dusty.
There's no quit wrong.
There's no quit. I don't care what I'm weighing. I got a job to do. I'm going to, you know, and I think that
right on, like, no one's business.
Yeah. Yeah. The high intensity training, I always kept my leg day pace up. You've trained legs with me. Like, I could keep that pace up at 3:30. I can do that for an hour. And if I think if I can train legs for an hour, I can do something else for an hour. It just takes, you got to get the, you got to switch it on, right?
58 minutes.
Yeah. You know, there's a discipline there. There's a certain standard you have to live by. You can't let your life drop, you know, but it wasn't easy. I tell you,
it wasn't easy.
You know,
well, it counts as cardio for sure.
A lot of recovery after that. You're drinking like a liter of water, just kind of sitting, thinking about life, you know, you got to get the electrolytes back in.
Oh, that's a riot.
Yeah. It's a scene. And as far as the women, I never got into bodybuilding for women. I mean, it's always nice, you know, when you're, you know, as a guy, especially a younger guy, if, you know, you meet a girl that appreciates big arms and all that sort of stuff. And obviously when you're dieting, you get a lot more attention from the girls, you know, the face comes in and you start to look, you know, different. So the girls that like muscle really like that. There's not a lot of chicks that like a 330 pound fucking monster bodybuilder. you know, someone's really got to love you, Dusty. You know,
that applies for me in general, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, yeah. So someone who's really got to really be willing to tolerate you at that point. So I was always very lucky. So
that's freaking classic. Oh, I love that. All right, well, hit another one here. I'm gonna let you run with that because you nailed the majority of our spots there.
Oh, okay. So there was one here about DC that I wanted to hit you with. I just got to find it. How would you structure your off season with training using your DC? Like, I think they just want to know your split. Like, how does your style of DC look over the course of the week?
Okay. So here's the thing. Do not do what I do. And the reason for that is it's no longer DC training. What I've got now is DC principles. Because we reached a point where I needed to focus on body parts. And Dante told me, he was like, look, DC is designed to get you as big as possible, as fast as possible, and the muscle is going to go where it's going to go. And most people, as you know, Ron, way too early in their career are starting, you know, the guy's 6 feet tall, 211 pounds. Like, I think my legs are too big for my arms. I'm like, what on your body is big enough at the national level? He's like, nothing. I'm like, then shut the fuck up and get bigger. If your legs blow out and get huge, let them. We'll figure out your arms later. You know,
put
what I mean?
As much muscle on this frame anywhere you can fucking get it.
Yeah, who cares? I don't care. And then down the line, well, to give you an idea, we didn't start looking at my physique until I was a pro. That's when it was like, okay, you know, you've got ridiculous standout body parts and terrible weaknesses. Now we're going to build it up. So my program, again, it just doesn't really apply. But what it is it rotates. The only change I've had is I actually train legs twice a week. With those, still DC principles, but there is a little more volume. And the reason for that is Dante surmised that because of my years of hockey, my legs just need more. When we up the volume, they started to change. And they're very fast twitch. So we had to play with how to do it. So I'm now, as you've seen, extremely slow on negatives and still extremely explosive on positives. Fortunately, that muscle's still there. And I'm learning with my clients, I can't actually teach everyone how to do that because some people, when their mind is letting their body go slow, it can't turn around and snap into an explosive, you know, positive portion of the exercise. For me, that's very easy. Like, because in hockey, speed is not about how fast you're going. It's how fast from zero can you get to full speed.
Right. It's an acceleration.
A fast hockey player can do that in two steps.
Yeah, it's a small ice surface, so it's all about acceleration.
Yeah, and your speeds change, and that's kind of what we learned with my body is it was being able to control the negative and jamming that positive. So my split, I'm actually training 5 days a week, two leg days, and then everything else just gets pieced in as it needs to be. And truthfully, which a lot of you guys don't realize, is I don't train back that often in the off season, because I train back because I love to. But I really I have to not because it's reached a point where like I can not train back for 3 months. It'll shrink. It'll come down in size. And then I need about 6 weeks to have it back to just blown out ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I actually take back completely out of the rotation. And now I'm only training chest, shoulders, arms and legs.
Well, I really like how you worded that. So I don't train pure Dorian style anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I follow all those same principles.
Right.
Like how to move weight, focusing on recovery, maximum intensity with lower volume, but still enough volume to grow. Mm-hmm. So those old, all that Dorian stuff is still very much in my head when I'm moving weights, you know, precision, all that sort of stuff. But mm-hmm. the split I'm following is actually the old split that I followed for like years and years when I was younger. And it's the old one right out of Blood and Guts. I'm actually following that again. It's 2-on-1-off mm-hmm. chest. I'm doing chest with tries though.
Right.
And then I'm doing quads and hams. I'm taking a day off, and then I'm mm-hmm. doing shoulders and calves. And then back and biceps. So I did alter it a little bit. The reason I put tries with chest and biceps with back is because my elbow joints do a lot better.
They move warm.
They just do a lot better now because I used to do the original split, right, which had biceps with chest and all that. But, you know, I feel like I do better because my joints are already heated up. Sometimes I'll throw in an arm day if there's a travel schedule thing that bumps me up. Yeah. I'll throw in an arm day because I can always use an arm day. And then sometimes I will do hams separately with calves. But it just kind of depends on the split. But yeah, I mean, for what I'm trying to accomplish right now, which is maintain as much strength as I possibly can, except for legs, I'm still trying to progress because I know I can neurologically get stronger without even adding muscle.
Right.
Like, just get strength back, you know? So I still train progressively with the intent to make progress, which is what you said about when you decide to get smaller, you're still going to train with the intent to make progress at all times. I never, ever, ever do a set like, this is good enough. I'll just do 10 ever. It's always like, okay, I got to make progress. What did I do last week? Even if I know I can't actually get stronger, you know, dieting and stuff, but the intent is always there.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep. You got one more, Dusty? We'll wrap it up. We've been going absolutely. Here.
This is the one, the final hurrah of the show right here. Bum, bum, bum. All right. This is, I got to do this to you, buddy, because this was an important question. At Mason_Bear wants to know, has Ron and his girl tag teamed Kendra Lust yet or not? Hey, it's Coach's Corner. People want to know.
Oh, I love that people think that we maybe tagged Kendra.
Hey, just leave it. You know, maybe you leave it a mystery. So you didn't say yes and you didn't say no because we know it's no, but you don't want to say that.
Hey, listen, we don't fuck all our friends. We don't fuck all of them.
Yeah, not all of them. That's good. Some of them, but not all of them. Ready for that question. See, I caught you.
We've got some good viewers out there. We've got some good viewers out there. No, hey, a guy can dream, Kenny. I'll just leave. I'll leave the viewers wondering on that. They can enjoy that one themselves.
I thought you'd like closing out on that important note.
Yeah, good way. And for the viewers who don't know who Kendra Lust is, just keep pretending you don't know.
Yeah, and don't Google it at work.
Don't Google her. No, that won't do any good. Hey, you got to have friends. You got to have friends in all the cities of America, Dusty.
Hey, people believe in you, man. That's what I got from that. I read that and I was like, he's got believers, man. You think maybe you should open up a church?
She's great people. Her husband's really cool. He's a cool dude, retired cop. They're great. So, That's awesome. They're watching the show. I got to come to Detroit and do a Mutant on a Mission. We'll go to a Lions game.
Love it. All right, man.
So, Dusty, that's it. Episode 3. We're going to be bringing people a guest next week.
Yes, sir.
And, you know, again, people can find on your YouTube so far. We're going to upload this. And then, of course, at Vices Radio, our good friend and producer, Scott McNally, taking care of us over at Vices, getting the audio on the RSS feed for iTunes and all that jazz. And, you know, we really appreciate everyone listening and giving us their time. And any final words?
Until next time, we'll get some more stuff out there for your cardio and your commute to work.
Yes, remember, guys, it's just bodybuilding. And all the rappers in the top 10, please allow me to bump thee. I'm stepping tall, y'all, and just like Humpty Dumpty, you're gonna fall when the stereos pump me. I like the rhyme, I like my beats funky, I'm spunky. I like my oatmeal lumpy, I'm sick with this. Straight gangsta Mac.
sometimes I get ridiculous. I'll eat up all your crackers and your licorice. Oh, yo, fat girl, come here, are you ticklish? Yeah, I called you fat. Look at me, I'm skinny. It never stopped me from getting busy. I'm a freak. I like the girls with the boom. I once got busy in a Burger King bathroom. I'm crazy.
At Voices Radio Network.